Everybody, it is me, Jeremy Vaney, your host, back again for our, is this 200th episode? I believe it is. I wish I had special prizes to give away for that, but maybe I'll think of something. You guys want prizes? Leave a comment in the comment section. Yes, I would like a prize, and I'll see what I can do. I don't know why you get a prize when I'm the one doing the work, but okay. This week's show is different for me because I don't usually do nuts and boltsy type stuff. I don't usually review old cases unless they're fantabulous. But I do love talking to Jack Brewer, and he loves talking about that crap. So I thought, how do I frame this conversation in such a way that we're actually asking fresh new questions? And one way to do that is to realize we're at a blessed point in a way in our brief history here, in ufology, which is that we've had decades and decades of, theorizing and cases to look at, witnesses to scrutinize, sociological patterns and personality patterns to play out within the field. We've got all this stuff to look at. Can we eliminate some theories? Can we see that if we're unconscious of the patterns that play out with people, then we get caught up in their story? And so we're constantly caught up in the same stories of disclosure, for instance, over and over and over again, without realizing that these same personality types, these almost, I don't know, archetypal patterns or pseudo-archetypal patterns are playing out in people. And if you can step back and be aware of that and be conscious of that, then you know disclosure isn't coming. You know that you're just watching a play being put on like a puppet show by some sort of spirits. No, I don't know that. I'm just saying. Sorry, Jack. I don't want Jack to be associated with that kind of thinking. But if you'd like to be associated with that kind of thinking, feel free to check out my new book, I'm to Tell You This, and I'm to Tell You It Is Fiction, because it is, if nothing else, trying to show you that there are different levels of depth and different ways to look at these subjects, even ways that I have not explored on this show. So please do check out I'm to Tell You This, and I'm to Tell You It Is Fiction. And while you're at Amazon doing that, go ahead and grab yourself a copy of Jack Brewer's book. Jack is our guest this week, if you haven't guessed by the fact that I've said that already. He's got a book called The Grays Have Been Framed, Exploitation in the UFO Community. So if you have not read that, and odds are you've not read my book, twofer. Get a twofer. I wish I had Jack's permission to put his book on sale or buy one, get one free or something for the 200th episode. But I didn't think ahead. I don't plan things. I'm not a very good host. So with that in mind, watch me attempt to interview another human being. All right, I'm going to laugh at my own jokes, probably for another couple of minutes into this interview, and then things will get serious. Here comes one of the very few UFO reporters, researchers, who I 100% completely trust is just in it for the honesty. Here comes Jack Brewer. We'll be back after this.
The UnknownCountry.com archive is one of the richest internet archives, podcast archives in the world, without question. It has a literal wealth of material, nearly 1,000 editions of Dreamland alone, and so much more. And speaking of so much more, listen to this from Nick Redfern from 2013. He's talking about viruses that apparently appeared in the context of UFO crashes back in the 50s and 60s, things that have been virtually forgotten and swept under the rug. But shouldn't we be thinking about strange viruses right now? I think it very definitely is something we should be thinking about. Here's Nick from Subscriber Specials in 2013.
And when they finally got to the location and found whatever it was, and reportedly it had been tracked on radar, coming down somewhere in the big thicket, so they knew there was something to be found. But what was sort of very disturbing is that in several of these recoveries, apparently there wasn't just one in the big thicket in the area, but there's actually three or four between 58 and 61. And every time the retrieval teams got close to these objects, until they decided the guys had to be fitted out with hazmat uniforms, they were overcome by nausea and dizziness, and reportedly two of them died of like a flesh-eating virus, not unlike what today we would call Ebola.
You can get this and so much more from unknowncountry.com. To find this particular interview, just go to the search engine and click on Alien Viruses and Subscriber Specials, and you'll find it right away. It's easy to search the unknowncountry.com archive. There's a year-by-year podcast archive, and there's a powerful search engine, too. And, of course, we're always ready to help. If you've got a search question for us, just send it to subscribers at unknowncountry.com. So subscribe to Unknown Country. Get involved. Keep this beautiful thing going, because it is really extraordinary. Unknown Country is, well, that's the word. It's extraordinary. Help us keep it that way. And above all, use it. Explore with it. There is so much here. Go to unknowncountry.com right now. It's time to subscribe.
For all of Whitley's available books, visit the new UnknownCountry.com store. Just click on the Store tab on Unknown Country's masthead, and you'll find a treasury of Whitley Strieber books, including classics like the Communion series, War Day and Majestic, and the eerily prophetic early novel Night Church, plus A New World, Afterlife Revolution, and all the latest. Visit the store now and join the adventure.
Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the program, Jack Brewer. Jack, aloha.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's been a while, Jack. It's been about a year. So I think a year ago, when I last did this show and I talked to you, probably there was something going on with like the drummer from Blink-182's organization, whatever that is. He was going to get us Disclosure. The military was coming out and they were going to tell everything. Leslie Kane was taking over the New York Times. We were just on the verge of finding out the truth about aliens. And I am certain it had to have happened and I missed it. What happened, Jack? Did I miss it or did it happen?
Well, as of this broadcast, I think that we are pretty much where we were December 2017 when the story broke, Jeremy.
Wait, what?
At least that's my vantage point.
Well, you're skeptical. You're pretty skeptical. Yeah, but you're known to poo-poo a lot of things. So let me ask you. There was also, I remember, an organization called Free, which promised the world to everybody, and they had a whole bunch of names attached to this organization. It was going to take the world by storm. It was going to be the next MUFON. Did that happen in the last year? That must have happened.
I think I've lost track of Free. I see the names of the people mentioned around now and then, and I see their work cited occasionally, but I have missed it as well. If they broke a bunch of stuff wide open,
this is really discouraging, and I'm sick of your debunking. But I'm going to try one more time. I know Barbara Lamb has made a resurgence in recent years, and she's brought to the stage actual alien human hybrid people. Now that must have won her, I don't know, every prize. Did it win her every prize in the book in science? Did it change the world, this discovery of aliens walking amongst us?
I am not aware of any prizes that went out to Barbara Lamb, no sir. Last I was on the trail of that, She was too busy to explain if any independent third-party medical exams had taken place. But one would think she should have cleared her schedule by now to get that cleared up. But if so, no, I did not hear anything about it.
What about Project Serpo? Anything?
I got nothing, Jeremy.
Fine. All right, Jack, I see you're going to be difficult on this show. Well, what the hell has happened in the last year? Anything? I mean, you've been searching the archives with FOIA requests for documents pertaining to UFOs and the such, and you've gotten some traction there. Did you win a prize? What happened?
I haven't been invited to any receptions yet, no.
Okay.
I do think that is why some of us tend to focus on older events is like as I continue to inquire with intelligence agencies about certain organizations or certain time frames, we can get documents that at least give us an idea of what we can actually verify, establish did and did not take place, where these current time stories can be very difficult because, as you're getting at, we've essentially had the same crew that was involved in the original 2017 New York Times ATIP story, the Pentagon UFO program, and had them pretty much recycle it at least three times and do what were supposed to be news stories. But we kind of always just end up with more questions than we started with. And we've had a lot of side stories, The Guardian and all kinds of outlets that have interviewed DeLong and Luis Elizondo, and we get told about new projects underway, and we get told about, agreements that were made with the Army to do research. But all in all, to have something we can sink our teeth into and say, here's what's happened, here's what they've learned, here's where it takes us, is all still pretty much just talk and speculation, where it, at least if you go back, in the 1950s, 1960s documents, we can look at what intelligence agencies said, what different researchers did. But we always just seem to end up with a trail of shrugging our shoulders as far as any actual phenomenon we might be interested in is concerned.
What about Elizondo? Is that his name? Luis Elizondo?
Correct.
Has anyone figured out whether he actually worked in the capacity that he claims he worked?
He has not, to the best of my knowledge, and I have followed that part pretty closely. He has not actually presented any documentation, any official documentation, clarifying his position with the ATIP. There's a lot of insinuations. There's a lot of verbal testimony to that effect. Pretty much a number of outlets just take it for granted at this point. But no, it seems still a matter of subjective interpretation as to whether or not the UFO aspect of these programs may have even been a recreational side interest of some of these people that have, as you know, long been part of the UFO narrative, the Robert Bigelow and many of his crew that ironically are considered to somehow be some new part of the story now or something. I'm not really sure how that works. But no, Luis Elizondo has yet to verify that he directed the ATIP.
But he does have a lot of people who have verified backgrounds in the military vouching for him, yes?
To some extent, there are people like, you know, Senator Reid, that claims that Elizondo was involved in it, but Reid also claims that he was never a hands-on manager of the project, that he just got them the money and kind of left it alone. And then we have people
that who
with
did?
Significant
that, I'm sorry, wait, let me read that Reid got the money and left them alone, or that Elizondo did?
Yeah, that Reid secured the funding for the project and then left the project alone.
But he said that Elizondo was involved in it then.
He did say that.
So why isn't that good enough?
I think it's not good enough, Jeremy, because it doesn't, by professional research standards, it can allow us to think that he was probably involved to some extent. We would have to, of course, establish that Senator Reid is not telling the truth, rather than just assume that to be the case. But by professional research standards, we would have documentation and authenticated documents from the Pentagon, the Department of Defense. Pretty much I got to where, I don't know, maybe a year into this story, I felt like that we were just going to keep going in circles with trying to connect dots by insinuation, and that we were just going to have to wait and see what the FOIA revealed, if anything. And one of the biggest reasons it's not really good enough what Senator Reid says is that we have conflicting reports on that there are official spokespersons from the Department of Defense that have said that Elizondo had no responsibilities at all in the project, much less ran it. So,
but these people acknowledge that there is a project?
They have. They have acknowledged there was a project. So there's a lot of discrepancies and a lot of insinuations, a lot of things to try to sort out by implication. And for me, I just kind of tired of that and like wanted the official documents as compared to things people were saying about it.
Well, you know what it sounds like to me as you're saying this is I'm hearkening back to everyone from Greer to Doty to go down the list of people who they seem to have figured out that if you can get into a room with people from the establishment, you know, politicians and military people, if you can establish that you were in the room, and even Bob Lazar to some extent, if you can just establish that in some capacity, you're a blip on the map. If you don't establish what you did in that room or anything, you can say anything and you can claim in the future to have held back some things and then you can claim those things. Do you think that Elizondo, do you see any indication that he is doing that?
He certainly gives a lot of suggestion that he would like to say more but can't. He frequently suggests there is some type of security oath that keeps him from presenting the documentation that people such as I ask for and say is important. Tom DeLonge was in a recent Guardian interview a few weeks ago, and I just have to say it's just an insult to intelligence to me that he was saying there were things that due to national security he could not discuss. And to the best of my knowledge, he doesn't even have a clearance, Jeremy. I don't know what he's talking about. And if he's suggesting that people that have security clearances are telling him things in confidence, That just opens, you know, so many avenues and questions that none of which are good for national security, for the quality of information that's getting pumped into the UFO community. I'd have a lot of concerns about it. And among those concerns is why people that are writing these stories that are interviewing them don't drill down through that. That's concerning as well.
Huh. Well, then again, with this administration, you know, like, here, Russians, have our secrets. Pretty much par for the course. So who knows? Maybe he's being a real patriot in this instance.
Yeah, you've definitely got a point there. I can't argue with that. A lot of the norms have fallen by the wayside. No doubt about that.
But do you get this? Like, there are certain people in this field who, when they open their mouths, you know they're lying. You it's in their body language, it's in their delivery, and it's in the stuff they're actually saying. I've never seen, I don't think I've seen, I've probably seen Elizondo speak, I don't remember, but definitely not Tom DeLonge. Do you get an immediate sense that he's lying when you see him speak?
Not necessarily, no. He presents himself well. He's articulate. He is an intelligent man by all indications. So it just becomes a matter of judgment with a lot of it. And that's in itself is a pet peeve of mine. When it comes to research, I don't like ambiguity. I don't like subjectivity. And my problem with that is a professional researcher, someone that's claiming to be following scientific protocols, should know that they should not be expected to be believed on trust. And so I have a lot of problems with someone that knows that and still wants to just shrug their shoulders and say, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but here's my story. I really don't understand how or why one comes forward in a situation like that. In order to answer that question, how and why, we then have to start looking at ulterior motives, and I don't like that. You know, in research, it should be clear. You know, someone's assertions should be backed up by evidence available for public review. You know, best case scenario is authenticated official documents, and someone should know that has worked at the Pentagon, that it has worked for the DOD, that has been in the Defense Intelligence Agency. So I have a problem with that whole aspect of these stories of that at best are stories of things people have seen flying in the sky like any of the rest of us may have. And because of their involvement in the military or the intelligence community, they're supposed to have more credibility, or their stories are supposed to carry more weight. And at the end of the day, we have a bunch of people telling stories that want to be elevated because of where they claimed they worked, that in a lot of cases, they're really not even coming across with that.
Well, yeah, and this is what I want everyone to see. You know, I'm being snarky and joking around here, but for decades, these same tropes play out. It's just you've got a different name and a different face to the characterization, but you've got, you know, the honest person who claims way too much knowledge for what they're, like you say, what their security clearance level is. You've got the guy who claims to have a background, you know, deep in this stuff in an official capacity, but won't prove it. You know, you've got whistleblowers who end up either being shady or being less than interesting, I guess, really blowing a whistle on nothing. You've got all of these, and that's before you get to like the obvious charlatans, the obvious hoaxers, the whatever. You've got this setup of dynamics going for decades and decades, at least since, what, the 80s, maybe the 70s? that I know of. And here we are yet again, and everybody gets excited for the promise of disclosure, but how can you when you've got this rigmarole going on? So, as always, I'm stuck wondering what produces that, and some of it is going to be on the part of people in the UFO community or wanting to be in the UFO community, famous people jumping in to, you know, sort of enthusiastically take over the scene or whatever, but... like you're saying, there's got to be someone who knows where these people work. There's got to be someone who knows what these people's clearances are. And if you know that it's not good enough, those people know. I'm talking about the people in the military, in politics. They know. And they know that someone like Tom DeLonge, and that's just a person, again, it's the traits of the person that are sort of universal. And the trait is... don't question me. I don't have to provide proof. You should just believe me. Take me at my word. They know that we're full of those characters, and they know that that's not real research. So why are they working with those characters? Why are they promoting those characters through their silence and through just the little bits of crumbs that they do give? Do you have any idea what the long-term goal of that is?
I think that it changes from one scenario to the next. I think there's layering agendas. I think a lot of it's greed. I think some of it's fame. I think some people are just stubborn, and once they promote a story or an angle, they're not going to give it up, and they're going to keep doubling down. I think some of it may be disinformation with purposes of spy catching or counterintelligence. I also think that we can't sleep on the theory of just true believers, that in spite of a lack of evidence for any given story, they'll stick with it. And being a former intelligence community or current intelligence community member, being well educated, being a former high-ranking official in the U.S. government does not exempt people from just being extremely biased with their opinions and things they want to believe in. I think another really important point is, like you're saying, Jeremy, this is a recurring theme for decades, that people come forward with information, stories, they'd like to tell us the rest, they can't, and they tell us to be patient. Given that's the case, makes it all the more important that someone wouldn't do that again. You know, I mean, like, if you know that's what keeps happening, that's all the more reason to have your ducks in a row when you jump the fence and say, okay, I'm no longer DIA, I'm UFO truth seeker, all the more important that you would do it right. And for whatever reason, they're not, which leaves a lot of questions with bad implications.
I've never asked you this before, and I don't know that you've thought of it, but let's see. Let's test it out.
Sure.
So I was watching a trailer for a new James Fox documentary on all of this, UFOs and the such. And in the trailer, you know, you see clips of testimony of things people claim. Jesse Marcel talks about Roswell crash. Couldn't have, you know, had to have been alien. Couldn't have been from here. There are people like Edgar Mitchell who claim things, but if you know anything about Edgar Mitchell, then you know that he's just claiming what other people have told him. He's not actually claiming to have firsthand knowledge, or he wasn't claiming to have firsthand knowledge.
Right.
So that's out. But people like Jesse Marcel and a lot of the military guys from the Roswell stuff through the years, they sounded authentic to me back in the day, and even now watching those clips. And I suppose even, you know, the Navy guys with the footage nowadays that has been in the New York Times or New York Magazine or whatever, they seem to be sort of, I don't know, speaking their truth or speaking to what they witnessed. First, let me ask you, do you think that those old timers were telling the truth? Like, do you think Jesse Marcel was, to the best of his knowledge, looking at alien debris?
I think in a lot of those situations, yes. I think that in probably the vast majority of them, that an extraordinary experience happens, at least way outside the normal range of what the person is used to. Then where the problem comes in is interpretation and retelling the story and embellishing on it. And I think that in the vast majority of cases, they do believe it when they're talking about something even decades ago. It's not even that I have to doubt them or that I necessarily think that it's incorrect, as much as it's a stance of I can't know that it's accurate until it's actually somehow verified and established, because, as you know, Jeremy, people tend to be wrong a lot about what they think happened and what they interpret it means. But I think most of the time they intend to be sincere. And I mean, many times in my life, I've been quite convinced of something that in hindsight, I think that I was pretty off the mark with. And it's all the more difficult once people go public and they have a public persona. And I think anybody that's watched this genre for any amount of time at all has seen people that were definitely arguing a point to one end more than they were actually trying to establish what happened.
So the question that I don't know if you've ever tackled is this: when you look at that, do you find it odd? Like there's something missing here. If you've got people talking about debris and bodies and, you know, a crash from 1947, and they seem sort of credible, okay. But then you've got years and years go by with incredible stuff in any, like, sort of official capacity. I mean, there are cases and there are certain hot spots and things like that that pop up that are intriguing. But in terms of, like, military people coming out and saying, I know what I saw, this is what I saw, isn't it far less spectacular? Like, we had to wait until 2017 to finally get some, like, gun camera footage of something with a story attached to it that's pretty unspectacular about people in the Navy seeing UFOs as opposed to bodies and aliens and all that. Like, that's a big, that's a large, you know, sort of wasteland of time between the 40s stuff and the now stuff. And the sense of what we have, the sense of what the military knows, seems to have done a backslide in some way. That, I mean, I don't know if that's fair to say, but it just looks that way to me. Does it look that way to you?
Yeah, it does. And I'm kind of reminded of finding out there was water on Mars and being like, well, it was there all this time. You know, so that doesn't change Mars. It just changes me, you know, and it is relevant. And again, it is a recurring theme. We can go back, and what interested me, one of the things that most interested me in the first place about sorting through the old 50s and 60s documents is they so much mirrored what's going on now. There were high-ranking intelligence officials saying that we don't think they're from this planet, and there's this and there's that, and congressional investigations, and we're putting a cabinet together. and it just never stopped. There's been fever of some kind or other ever since. And as you asked earlier, it's reasonable to ask why that is. And I think there's a lot of reasons. There's certainly a lot of people that believe it. As you and I'm sure many of your audience believes and may very well be right, there is a lot of people that believe there's some core phenomena. My personal opinion is a lot of that phenomena, whatever it may be, has been exploited. The very topic of it has been exploited by everybody from charlatans to CIA analysts, but it's certainly something that has recurred again and again and again. And we have big, important people speaking out on it. We have a lot of anticipation. We have great films about it. We have fiction. We have nonfiction. And still, we just keep really not knowing what if anything can be proven about it.
Yeah, but and let me ask it a different way too.
We'll be back after this.
This is Whitley Strieber. Listen to me now from June of 2010 talking to Alan Lammers about an incredible thing that happened to him on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
Here you are in South Sulawesi in the little town in the district of Sandu Batu. What happened? You were told something rather strange.
Well, we were told before we went, like my friends that I work with the NGO, they told me that when you pack, because it kind of happened by accident, I went out to buy a raincoat. It rains quite a bit in this part of the world. And so I went out and I bought a yellow raincoat. And my friend said, I'm sorry, you can't take that to Walla Walla. And I said, well, why not? And he says, well, you can't wear that color. So anyways, excuse me. So I thought, okay, well, what colors can I wear? They said, well, you can only wear black or white. You cannot wear any bright colors, no bright green, especially no yellow. And, you know, that's all you should bring. And I said, well, what would happen? And they said, well, people disappear.
You will find the rest of that story, and it is brain-bending, in the June 5th edition of Dreamland, June 5, 2010 edition of Dreamland in the unknowncountry.com archive. This archive is one of the richest of its kind in the world, probably is the richest of its kind in the world, filled with extraordinary shows, of which this show is certainly one, this show with Alan Lammers. You will never have heard anything like it. It does what Dreamland is here to do. It opens your mind to the fact that we live inside a hidden reality that we prefer not to acknowledge, but not here. Here on unknowncountry.com, we do acknowledge it. We live in it and we love it. Subscribe today. You can't go wrong. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and get started.
The new Unknown Country is becoming a social hotspot for people interested in UFOs, ETs, the contact phenomenon, and so much more. Becoming a site user is free and enables you to participate in our active free message boards. And if you join as a paid subscriber, you'll also gain access to our weekly subscriber chats and video meetings, plus access to our podcast archives, meditations, video section, and so much more. So join free or subscribe. Either way, unknowncountry.com belongs in your life.
Welcome back.
So besides you know, we've had Phil Corso and we've had Bob Lazar, who in their own ways, in their own moment, seemed credible. But then the more you're looking, you do, the more you go, they're not so credible. But you look at Marcel and you look at those, the original Roswell witnesses, and we know what their backgrounds are. They are who they say they are. So they are credible in that sense. They were where they said they were. We know this. Has there been anyone like that who we know their background, we know they were where they said they were, who is either given a deathbed confession or otherwise a confession to either another UFO crash or what we've done with that stuff since the Roswell crash? Has there been anyone that you can think of that passes the sniff test?
Not that I'm aware of, no. There have been a number of people that claim various things like, I don't remember if his name was Brandon Chase or Chase Brandon, but it was one of the two come to mind, that he was yet another in the long line of CIA government people that seem to have simply come across a box of Roswell things sitting around. And, you know, a million stories, but I don't know how much they can be believed. As we were saying, though, I do think that a lot of the original people actually believed it. I don't know. I'm not really that familiar with it enough to say how many of their stories could be found in 1947 as compared to when those stories were dug up by, you know, Friedman and Moore and people years later. But no is the answer to your question. I don't know of anyone that's given that, okay, here's the goods, finally confession, that was actually able to take us to anything, which, you know, one of the most unbelievable aspects to me of the Knapp and Lazar story is that they supposedly have element 115 and that this would be the smoking gun, and for inexplicable reasons just don't feel like revealing where they have it hidden. You know, that it's pretty tough to take seriously.
What about, do you follow or have you followed the Rendlesham case?
To some extent, yes, I have.
So, because to me, this is an interesting, just in the sociological petri dish part, because this
absolutely
is something from, you know, our lifetimes. And it does seem as though, again, there was an event and it at least seemed mysterious to the people involved. But then what they did with that is, you know, if it wasn't an experiment on these people to see what they would do with that information, it sure turned into that. It to me is an example of how you can have an experience that you believe is true, whether it's true or not, I mean, but it is irrelevant. If you believe that you had this big mystical experience, do you embellish it? Do you try to make money off of it? Do you try to make a movie? Do you just tell your story and leave? What do you do? Who are you? Again, this has been a theme of this show, The Experience, these past few weeks. Who are you in that moment? What do you think about that in terms of that these are, again, military people who have oaths that they take, and, you know, we always want to be patriotic and rah, 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 the military, they're serious people, they're disciplined and all of that. But through the years, they seem to come unraveled and they seem to want to reveal more, which may be lies. They may be making it up, or it may be more. And then they argue amongst themselves over who's telling the truth, who is hypnotized, who was drugged, who wasn't, who's lying, who was there. You know, they've got all of this bickering going on, and some people seem to be trying to make money, some people don't. What does that reveal about maybe even our sense of lionizing people who are in the military as sort of robotically disciplined people who can hold secrets like that forever?
I think, like you're saying, it's a really interesting sociological aspect of the whole study of UFOs, and it tells us something about us as people that we may or may not identify with these events and how much they may become parts of our lives. I have talked to people in my study of the topic that sometimes they become overwhelmed and really identify with a sighting or an event, and sometimes they don't. And I could only guess why that might be. But Rendlesham definitely offers us an event that happened over several days. Several things were happening. That's undisputed. So then it does just become a matter of trying to sort out what that is. And as you're pointing out, it got extremely complex. A case that I like to mention along those lines as well is the Travis Walton case, because so often it's a matter of someone describing a memory and there weren't witnesses, or it's been many years ago and it's really hazy and they really can't even nail down maybe even a year, much less a date and time. Where with the Walton case, there's not a lot of wiggle room there. With something pretty unusual happened, or it was faked. And it's not just one of those ambiguous events that we're really not even sure, and we try to piece together, well, was it summer or was it winter, to try to build some research around it. And Rendlesham is kind of like that to me, that we may never know for sure what it was, but we do know something took place. Always, to me, when the military aspect is involved, that's a bit of a concern. I really don't buy into the idea of a spacefaring or a ultra-advanced terrestrial intelligence would have any more particular interest in nuclear weapons or military bases than anything else. I tend to lean towards thinking that's kind of a subjective human idea. Like in my old NICAP research, I came across that they had theories about there were more sightings when Venus and Mars were closer to Earth, because that might indicate bases of some type on Mars and Venus. And I tend to think the nuclear and the military base thing is kind of along those lines of subjectivity. But it is a really interesting sociological thing, and I don't have much more to say about Rendlesham than it is extremely complex. And I know that there are people that would certainly think that that's part of the phenomena in itself, that it becomes entangled in the behavior that plays out over years.
Well, let's take a step back now and just look at everything that we've discussed here, because we are at a privileged place of having decades of ufology to look at to see what's what, and to see what is old thinking that doesn't really work and what is true. Because the thing that
that's right that mm-hmm. that's right. When, excuse me, when sure. NICAP was doing it, it wasn't 70 years old. That's absolutely right.
You're right. So in terms of what we've been talking about here, the thing that people love to hide behind, and I did too, because it worked for a while, is the notion that, well, of course, someone like Bob Lazar, of course they'd erase his background. You would never know. You would never know Elizondo. They would never tell you. They would erase who he was. They let you know what they want you to know. Or in terms of Roswell, well, it went into corporations and they keep the secret. So it's this military stuff is parsed out, or this crashed alien stuff is parsed out to corporations. They're in charge of it now. The whole reason that we would know about Roswell is because people can't keep secrets. But the thing we hide behind is that because of officialdom, because they swear an oath, because they could come after your family or you or whatever, put you in jail, that you do keep a secret. So with our advanced age here in this, we can see which one actually plays out over and over again. And it's the not secret keeping, right? Like one of these two things wins. Either there are tons of secret keepers or stuff comes out. You can't have it both ways. And we see it not just in ufology. We see it in, just look at all these documentaries coming out about Facebook and social media and how awful Amazon is in its own way. And, you know, all of these corporate secrets can't hold. So the big political secrets can't hold. The corporate secrets can't hold. The military secrets, to an extent, can't hold. Then why are we able to hide behind this notion that there is the hidden hand that can silence us, and that's why we're all confused? It doesn't seem to silence us.
No, it doesn't over time. I think that there are operations that can consist of a small number of people. If they're really prioritized operations, they might could keep a very selective group of a cabinet on a needs-to-know basis that other people don't get to, as they say, see the whole puzzle box lid. However, there is so very little indication that there's an extraterrestrial presence from any of the FOIA material that I'm aware of. And what, like you're saying, with age, we have the luxury of knowing have been years of people that could have planned this great escape and the way Snowden did with privacy issues. Yet they haven't seemed to do that. And then they want to act like they did it, but didn't bring any evidence with them. And for whatever reasons, don't seem to even be in jeopardy from their former employers. Brings up, you know, a lot of questions. I try to be tolerant of people's stories, particularly those that are personal stories, people that weren't in the military, that weren't defense contractors, that just have experiences that are odd and they aren't sure what to think about, or they make interpretations and aren't sure if they're correct or not. I try to be really tolerant of that, and I think the best we can do in most circumstances is just suspend judgment. And then in the arena of the military and the intelligence community and journalists and professional researchers, we have the right and the responsibility to ask them to back up their material with evidence that supports it in proportion to the claim they're making. That can get to be a really tough line to walk. But over time, no, we certainly have not seen some of the most concerning intelligence operations have come to light. I shudder to think of the ones that might not have, but it's appears to be really difficult to keep something quiet. And not just quiet, but to avoid being proven happened long term, like an MK Ultra project, that there are going to be personnel, there are going to be documents that can say, yeah, I worked with that guy, and he worked with him, and here's where they were, and here's what they did. And we just aren't seeing that kind of thing. The ATIP may be one of the first of them, you know, since like Blue Book and that kind of thing that everyone already knows about. But obviously, I remain pretty skeptical that it's going to bear significant fruit. And I think we're just going to keep coming back to, we can suspend judgment on people's personal stories and their interpretations of those events. But when it comes to researchers and members of the clandestine services, then we should expect evidence in proportion to their claims.
I think also, you know, for something to be really real, maybe to be completely covered up, there has to be an element of whatever the intelligence is behind the phenomenon doing the covering as well in some way. And you know, maybe this is fantastical, but I'll throw it out there anyway. I mean, I'm thinking of the Gulf Breeze case, because here's a case where like an entire town is seeing this UFO that is clearly, you know, a ship, if the pictures are to be believed. Of course, the pictures may not be believed, because everything about this case is shady, except that even the people who are throwing shade at it are shady. You know, I'm thinking about the person, you know, the claim that there was this model of a UFO found in Ed Walters' attic,
yeah,
made from his own architectural schematics. I mean, the way that all came out and the way the local politicians wanted, or politician, I think it was the mayor, I'm pretty sure, wanted to sort of go after him and get rid of all this. So you had all of that going on. But you also have Bruce Maccabee, who was there and was seeing balls of light, like, come up out of the ocean, go over his van, you know, all this stuff. Jeff Ritzman, who got to look at the original Ed Walters photos and saw detail in there that he couldn't explain in the originals. And again, an entire town is seeing this stuff. The military seems to take an interest in it. And there's also this odd military thing that happens, I think, overseas, right? Where this sort of squadron is playing with a Ouija board, and the Ouija board tells them to go to Roswell.
Right.
I mean, to Gulf Breeze. And
right,
so they go AWOL to go. I mean, just all this sort of craziness happens all at once. And then, poof, seemingly overnight, it disappears. Ed Walters disappears. He never resurfaces like they always do if they're fraudulent to claim more information. He gets divorced, as Jeff Ritzman points out. His wife never says, oh, this was nonsense. In fact, I think she said the opposite. Yeah, this stuff was true, but, you know, that's not why we're divorced. I think I could be making that part up. But it goes away, just completely off the map. That, to me, strikes of a reality and almost a paranormal creepiness to the way it just has completely disappeared. Does that track with you, or is that a step too far? Because I don't want to throw you under the bus with my paranormal leanings, Jack.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that Gulf Breeze is like you were saying about Rendlesham, that there's just a whole lot of stuff that happened. And so we can debate or argue about what any of it means, but it's certainly complex. I do get a little concerned about, and I think you touched on it earlier, the theory of a lack of evidence indicates something strange was going on. That's always kind of a concern of mine. It's really hard to say, Jer, and I think sociologists are gonna debate and study this stuff a long time, because when we discuss Gulf Breeze, we're talking about a time that's relevant to the era as well, that there was a lot of belief in the UFO community that stuff was going on. Disclosure was coming. This was really it this time. It's blowing wide open. They're having the MUFON symposium in Gulf Breeze. Like you say, NSA analysts in Germany have gone AWOL to get there because it's time. The rapture was coming in Gulf Breeze. So perhaps there's some indication of something paranormal in all of that. I would agree with you on this. If there is, we don't know how to measure it yet. We really don't know how to quantify what's happening in these, not just high strangeness stories, but just people lose their minds and go off the rails stories too. That is just part and parcel of the UFO community for whatever reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me, too, that there's not even, like, a folkloric, as far as I know, a local folkloric seed that was planted there, right? I mean, it completely disappeared. It's not like, remember the time in Gulf Breeze, you know, where the kids are like, Mom, Dad, what was Gulf Breeze? And any of that. Like, again, an entire town saw this. Did they not talk about it ad infinitum with their family and friends? Did they not raise their children to know that there was this time, this magical time, when UFOs were taking over the skies and the seas? I mean, how did this not break out into a mythological moment at the very least?
Maybe it'll break out later, like Roswell did. Like, I recall one time the mayor at the time of Roswell was asked if he believed in aliens, and they said something to the effect of, I believe in commerce in Roswell, something to that effect. And it is interesting that they don't have an annual festival that I know of, or that they don't celebrate it or something. Maybe they will in the future. I don't know. I am reminded, too, of an anecdotal story someone told me once when I was talking to them about Gulf Breeze, and they were one of the people that had hung out and watched the sightings and was convinced at the time that something was going on, and in hindsight were much less convinced, and told me that when they look back at it, they think it's almost like a funny, kind of embarrassing almost, that they were gathering, the group this person was with was gathering in a parking lot beside near a naval base, and then not really factoring in that the naval base might be responsible for some of the lights and the craft they were seeing in the air. And part of my reason to share that story is it might offer some explanation, but it also gives us an example of there are people with different interpretations of it. And we might hear some from the ones that interpret something extraordinary happens, and then sometimes the ones that interpret it was just a lot of hoopla may just kind of stay quiet, and then vice versa. At other times we might see a big skeptical amount of material on it, and then the people that believe something extraordinary was going on, mixed with possibly some hoaxes and shenanigans, might tend to just not want to argue and lay low. And then there's the subjectivity of each of us too, of which material do we tend to follow? Do I want to read the stuff about the ones that think that it's pretty mundane and explainable, or do I want to read the really interesting or more interesting to some of us aspects of it that may indicate something paranormal or currently unknown? I think that applies to a lot of cases, all that mixed bag stuff.
But you would think that people who live near a naval base would be used to that, or an Air Force base would be used to that. And it's the same thing with, like, the Phoenix Lights. Obviously, and people hate it when I say this, but obviously those lights are flares. They are a flare drop. But there was a crappily filmed mysterious object or bunch of lights that looked as though they were an object that flew through the sky earlier that night. And so did they drop these flares to throw us off the scent of that, of that real whatever that was event? And again, this is a town that you would think, you know, Phoenix, Arizona, aren't they used to flare drops? So this flare drop must have looked pretty dramatic. And I'm assuming then that they've never dropped a flare drop like that before or since, or else it would not have caused the uproar it did, and we'd still be hearing about it if they have dropped it since. So why did they only drop that flare drop that one night? Like, this is the way I'm starting to look at things.
Yeah, maybe so. Something that I think plays into that, too, is there was a buildup to that. I recall that people that I knew that were interested in the topic here in Central Florida were even discussing, there's so many sightings out there in Phoenix, maybe we should go. Should we go check out Phoenix? And different people were discussing, you know, what it, if they could get off work, what the cost would be, all of this. So I think that plays into, does that cause the public then to be watching more and then disrupted more? Is that part of the whole military experiment? Is it a sequence of coincidences and bizarre things that just come together in just the right way? I don't know, but that's an aspect of it that's often left out of the Phoenix Lights, is the main sighting gets so much of the discussion, but there was a lot of stuff going on in the days leading up to that. And understandably, it gets overlooked by, I don't know how many people that say, you know, a black V the size of, you know, a aircraft carrier or whatever floated overhead, understandably gets a lot of the attention. That's the kind of event, again, like Rendlesham, that we know something happened, and it becomes a matter of what and how people responded to it and why. I think that would be really fascinating to know if it was some type of military or government intentional deception to see how people responded. If it wasn't, it seems pretty conclusively something pretty extraordinary. It's just like you say, it's just really hard to imagine that they were moving an exotic aircraft and said, whoops, we didn't mean for anybody to see that. You know, it would
be
pretty extraordinary. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, is there a piece of that you as a researcher can find out? Like, could you do a FOIA request to, or maybe there's something even less drastic than that, just asking a spokesperson or something. Have they ever in at that base near Phoenix dropped that particular formation of flares before or since? And if not, why not? I mean, is that something that we could find out?
Yeah, theoretically, we should be able to find out if that was the official explanation, then we should be able to find out, unless it's classified, what the mission was, what it involved, and then we could do a request to the same agency. on when they had last done it using whatever aircraft and materials that was, and when they did it afterwards, like a date range of, say, you know, 2 years in each direction or something like that.
See, Jack, yeah, I'm going to win you that. I'm going to win you that prize at the end of the all of this.
Right?
Isn't it sad that like people make great discoveries and not everybody, obviously, but a good portion of people, the whole reason is like because they want a prize. They want recognition. Like they want the thing in the Cracker Jack box. Like it's not enough to have discovered aliens.
Yeah. The Phoenix Lights, the famous cases, I generally don't pry into too much. Maybe incorrectly, I generally feel like someone probably already has, but that may not, you know, be accurate. But as I'm sure you can empathize, just, you know, you sit down at the old laptop and say, okay, you know, FOIA request on Rendlesham, you just kind of just sigh and go, oh, for crying out loud, you know, where do you even begin to try to unravel that? Or Phoenix Lights, something that hasn't already been done. But sure, I would encourage people to try it. And as you're saying, you could find out whatever information is available on the flare drop and then what kind of similar missions took place at what time. And what we may kind of be getting into here or hitting upon is, like we were saying about Gulf Breeze, that the whole mindset of the town at the time tends to play a lot into it. And is that mindset justified because of things that have been happening, or are those things being perceived to have been happening? And it's probably some of both at different times and depending on which particular case we look at.
All right. My last question, which is sort of a two-part, I guess, is have you seen any evidence in an uptick of UFO sightings either since the ATIP stuff in 2017, or if not, since COVID?
I don't really monitor number of sightings, Jeremy. I think that interest is up. People are reading about it. I don't even know, though, I haven't monitored if organizations are getting more membership or subscriptions or interest. So I really don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I know, I think Tim Banal, I interviewed him, which I don't know when I'm playing that episode, but I interviewed Tim for the show. And he said that he had heard that UFO sightings have been up since COVID anyway, but nothing, he didn't know anything firm about that. It's just something that he had heard. So I don't know. But it strikes me that one of the things that skeptics sort of point to in terms of UFO sightings is like if something catches fire in the media, then there's going to be sort of like a mass hysteria or a bunch of people reporting stuff all of a sudden. And it seems to me that that didn't really happen as far as like the Nimitz UFO and that sort of stuff. I mean, it caught fire in the media, but that didn't seem to lead to more UFO reports that I could tell. But I haven't really been monitoring like you. And with COVID, I mean, I would have thought with COVID, people are staying in their house. So, but maybe they're going out in their yards and barbecuing. I don't know. They got plenty of time to look up.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, and I just got to say for me, too, the political climate has seemed to cause some of the UFO stuff to seem less relevant, you know, like there seems like some urgency in the political climate and the health world with COVID. And I continue to chip away at my FOIA stuff, and I am working on this NICAP material, but I'm not sure as we talk here in October of 2020, how many people are gonna like report a UFO sighting to a national organization right now. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, and again, you're bringing us to things that we can almost kind of know with our privileged 2020 hindsight. I guess no pun intended. It kind of is 2020 hindsight, which is, as you're saying, the political climate and the disease in the air, all of the things that people are really worried about, now would be the time to bring forward the free energy device. Now would be the time for the alien disclosure of aliens that can save us from disease, or technology that can get us off the planet, or whatever, you know, with the imminent environmental collapse at our door, with the need to go green. Where are these things that we were told all of this is secretly about? So you can pick apart these things and say, because they're not happening at the very moment that we need them most, they probably were never true to begin with. I think we can look back and see that now, yeah?
Yeah, it would. It'd be a great time for one of Barbara Lamb's hybrids to step up for some blood work if they have a advanced immune system, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. Or, you know, as I was joking, someone was joking with me in the comments of the first episode, you know, back of the experience, the Indigo Kids, the Star Seed, the, you know, these miracle children who were born in the last decade or two, who were supposed to have all the inherent knowledge that they're just born with, and the empathy and all of that. I mean, outside of Greta Thunberg, where are they? You know, like, where are the children to save us all? Like, none of these fantasies are more than fantasies, and we've got to get over this. Again, coming back to who are you in this moment, isn't it time to drop the fantasies? I mean, because there is a reality to this stuff, and we really don't know what that is, and we're never going to get there. If we keep holding on to the old thinking, the old wish fulfillment, the old fantasies, the delusions, if we keep holding on to that because it's a mystery, and so everything can't count anything out, well, you kind of can. We have enough time to look back and count some things out. And it's interesting. I was going to say, and so thank you, Jack, for doing that with me. But really, you're looking back right now at NICAP, and I didn't even ask you, why are you doing that?
Well, it started as I was looking at comparisons of current things. And the more I got into it, the more interesting I found their ties to the intelligence community and some of the different characters that were involved in it. And I'm compiling material on it, writing a book, for lack of a better term. And the people felt different ways about NICAP at different times. They felt like that the organization was solid and did good work. They've gotten some really good props over the years. Other times they've been criticized for being gullible and credulous and claiming to be dedicated to scientific work while appearing to be biased. Then at other times, they've claimed to have been infiltrated by the intelligence community. And then yet at other times, their members would claim, well, there were intelligence community members that took interest in it, but they never really affected the daily operations of the organization. And as I've continued to research it, I find it interesting that all of those seem to be true at different times. And the intelligence community was indeed interested, for whatever reasons, in NICAP, just probably not for the reasons that we often like to think that our work comes under scrutiny by the powers that be. You know, you slap the hornet's nest, and if you get chased, you like to say you're close to the truth. And maybe you're just getting asked what you're doing because it's got national security implications sometimes.
Well, that is fascinating. If people want to follow your work, or if they want to whistleblow, If they want someone with, to whom in whose ear they can blow a whistle, you're the man. Where do they find you on the internet, Jack?
I am at the UFO Trail blog. It's a Google blog, ufotrail.blogspot.com. I also hang out a lot on Twitter. At the UFO Trail is my handle, but you can pretty much find all of my stuff, links to my Twitter account and latest thing that's been rattling around my mind at the UFO Trail.
Excellent. Well, Jack, thank you for doing this. What to me has been a stellar episode, so I appreciate it. This was, so far, what I've been doing here on the show is reinvigorating. Which I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be, because I was hoping, like, I'll peter out again and then I can go do other things because I've got a lot to do. But it's interviews like this, Jack, that make me want to keep doing the experience. So thank you.
Well, that's great. I'm really encouraged to hear that. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that sound means we are out of time. I want to thank again my special guest, Jack Brewer. Please do go visit him at his UFO Trail blog, and also get his book, The Grays Have Been Framed, Exploitation in the UFO Community. Rare is the author in UFO-dom who is just in it for the complete honesty, right? For seeking out the facts. So let's support that. Grays Have Been Framed, Exploitation in the UFO Community. Go get it. If you haven't read it, read it. Review it. Love it. I don't know. Do something with it. All right. See you next week. Take care, everybody.